So maybe you've been here for all of the sermons, or maybe you've only picked up one or two, or maybe this is your first one. I could try and preach all those, but we'd be here forever. So I would direct you back if you want to take a listen. Some of this sounds interesting, or you want to hear a little bit more, you can go back and go to our website or check out the podcast that we have, and you can listen to them on your drives or while you walk or whatever it might be. If you need help with that, find me after church. I can help you and point you in the right direction. But what we're trying to do in these opportunities to look at the Lord's Prayer in a new way, we're doing it in a way of looking at the language. When we read our biblical story, when we read the scriptures that we heard today, we read it in English and we speak it in that way. But we recognize that they have been translated. From the very earliest times, it was written in Greek, and we translated it. So first to Latin, and then to Middle English, and then other times we tried to go back to the very Greek. But what we remember is that Jesus spoke Aramaic to the people. The language of Hebrew was the language that they would have used in the synagogue, in the church. The language of Greek was the language of empire. And so, when we read and we listen to the words of Jesus' prayer to his disciples in Aramaic, it can be translated in a different way. So far, this is where we've gotten. Divine parent of the cosmos, focus your light within us. Create your reign of unity as your desire acts within us. Grant what we need each and every day, and loose the cords of mistakes binding us as we release the strands we hold that bind others. We find ourselves now in that next part of the text. This idea of leading us into temptation. Who leads us and who makes us do what we do? I had a conversation this last week with a friend of mine, and we were chatting about running and things that we do, and she said, good luck with this whole running thing once the baby arrives. And I said, no problem. We got one of those jogging strollers. You know, you put the baby in the jogging stroller, and then you can just run to your heart's content. She said, well, good luck with that. She goes, my first one loved it. I put him in the jogging stroller, put his sippy cup right beside him, and we could go for miles. But with my second, she said, the first time I tried to put her in that seat, she goes, I sat her there, and she went straight. And so I bent her over and put one arm in. And as soon as I went to go get the other arm in, she slithered the other arm out. And then I tried to push her, and I was trying to hold her down. She was like, I had this 8-month-old child getting it out of this seat. I could not make her get into that seat. Finally, when I did get her in a way that I strapped her in, she screamed for the first 100 yards and then started kicking and screaming. And she said, I turned around and went back and said, it's not worth it. Who leads who? You can't make me. Anybody heard those words before? I think I said those last week. No, but I mean, we have this idea that we say, hey, I know best. mother say to a child one time when they were saying, "You can't make me," she said, "I brought you into this world, and I can take you out." Who leads who? This week, I've really struggled with these words, as I have with all of them, in a way. But it was interesting, I found something out. I have been consulting many different books as I've gone through the study, and many different kind of theologians and writers, and today's text, they forked. Okay? They forked a little bit in their ways of looking at this, because when I started looking at this understanding of leading, the Aramaic understanding and the Aramaic language looks at it in a way that they don't have a belief and understanding that we are led into things, that you can't make somebody do something. They don't understand this idea of temptation as being led into it. They don't have that belief of the devil made me do it. They don't have that understanding. It just doesn't exist in their framework of logic. And so I started kind of exploring the text from that point of view. But then I have another favorite person that I look to, and his name is John Dominic Crossan. He's a great theologian, really challenges me in a lot of different ways. And I went to see him, and he said, this piece of the prayer, it all goes back to the temptation story that Jesus had after he's baptized. And you've seen my sermon book before, and I looked and I had all my stuff written in these notes, and I thought, this is taking me in two totally different directions. How is it that I'm supposed to figure out what to share with you all on Sunday morning with two of these important people looking at this text, and they're going in two totally different directions? Because the whole thing about what Crossan is saying is that after Jesus is baptized, he is then led up and out into the desert for 40 days and 40 nights, and he's tempted. And if you remember, he's given three temptations on there. The first is turning stones into bread. The second is that, well, within Mark's gospel, is that he would throw himself off of the temple, and the angels would come and pick him up. And then the last one is all about power. If he would only bow down to the evil one, that he could have everything he ever wanted. Then I was like, I don't like that. So I said, I think I'll go the other way. I think I will look at it in terms of what our other theologian, Douglas Klotz, talks about from the Aramaic understanding. And so I said, I'm not going to be led down that path. She had broken her hand. And I said, what happened? She goes, I was walking my dog. And I said, how did you break your hand walking your dog? And she said, I started going and he saw a squirrel and he took off. And he started pulling me and I started going faster and faster and faster. And I finally couldn't go any faster. And I started tumbling and he started pulling me along. And I said, why didn't you let go of the leash? She said, I couldn't let go. hold on to? Things that you hang on to so much, so dearly, that it leads you into a place that you don't want to go. How many of you have ever said something like, well, I'd really like to do this in life, but I really have to take care of this first? Or maybe you say, you know what, I can do this myself, and I don't need anybody else to help me. Or maybe you said, you know, I'm just not like them, and so I'm going to do it my way, because my way is better. Wella Tahalan. Wella Tahalan. That is where I ran into problems. Because this is the Greek word that, when translated back to the Aramaic, comes back as, don't let us. Don't let us enter. Don't let us be drawn into, don't let us be gathered up into that which is false or deceptive. And Bishop, loosen the grip of that which rots us from the inside. Hear that for a minute. Don't let us be led to that which rots us from the inside. That's the same text. How much do we know that we have inside of us that we hang on to, that we hold on to? Maybe it's that stuff that we just covered last week, that thing that we have with that other person that we're just hanging on to, that way that we need to forgive them, or we need to let go of, but that offense just sits there and rots inside of us and turns us into the person that we don't want to be. How many times is there something that is inside of us? It's a belief structure that holds us back and that keeps us from doing the things that we need to do and the ways that we can proclaim the gospel in this world. And it just holds us down. See, the rabbi's prayer, when Jesus teaches this to his disciples, he is teaching them a prayer that he has crafted throughout his understandings of life, through his learnings, and also through his experiences. All the things that he has seen, all the things that he has done, he uses to craft this prayer so that they have an idea of who God is, who he is as a teacher, and how they are to pray. But remember, he's also a prophet. He's also one that is challenging the world as we see it, so that we might be workers and we might be ones that work to make this world into one that looks more like God wants it to look. So it's also a call if we could lay down that which we surround ourselves with, protect ourselves with, hold on to, if we could open ourselves to God, what could we do or be? How many of us hear that voice inside of us that says, I just can't? I started making a list of things of why I can't do stuff. Have you guys ever done that? or I just, you know, it would be intrusive, or it would be this, or I'm, you know, we all have those things that hold us back. Those things that we say that we can't do. And then we have the ones that we lay on other people. How many of you have ever heard, you can't do that because, well, you're too young. Or, you can't do that because, well, you're too old. Or, well, you can't do that because you're a woman. Or, well, you can't do that because you're not really one of us. Or, you can't do that because you don't love the way that we love. Or, you can't do that because you don't look the way that you should. This prayer, like it has been from the very beginning, is one that challenges everything about who we are. It is an invitation to look at things in a new way, but it is also a chance for us to break out of the mold that we think has held us back, that has held us back, and that we construct in our own minds. What's interesting is that Luke and Matthew both add something. One adds another, and another leaves it out. And protect us from the evil one. What's fascinating about this is that it doesn't come from an idea that is in Aramaic. What it finds resonance in, as I've talked about before, is in the Greek understanding of faith and religion. See, that harkens us back to the story of a Greek experience where the gods would set up systems and experiences that heroes would have to go through. And the hero would have to go through this and would have to take on different challenges, or might have to find different things to prove their worth to the gods. And then maybe they would be received. But Jesus' prayer, when understood in a language that is not part of that system, shatters that understanding. When we embrace God's call and shed those things that hold us back, those surface things that we feel like are important, and seek a deep and profound life that brings about God's understanding of the world and God's kingdom or reign, we can change things and we can be free. And what we can recognize is that the leadings that happen, the movement that we have, is energized by what comes inside of us, how we've been embraced and how we've been created with the spark of the divine, that we become co-creators with God in relationship, and that we bring about a world that people can be free in, to be who they are. To share kindness and compassion, love and forgiveness. That we can help people to develop the gifts that are inside of them. That we can recognize them and celebrate them instead of pushing them down and squashing them and keeping them to the sidelines. Because what we recognize is when we pray that we might find the freedom in who we've been created to be, what could we do? What could you do as an individual? What could we do as a congregation here? Who could we feed? Who could we be there for? Who could we house? Who could we love and show God's mercy? That, my friends, is something that I would love to be led to. I pray that it might be so.
Thank you for listening to the White Oak Pond Christian Church podcast. We hope that it's been a blessing to you this day. White Oak Pond seeks to be a place where we accept one person at a time to Christ's never-ending and forgiving love. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast so that you can receive sermons each and every week. And also rate us. It really helps. Thank you again, and may you know joy in powerful ways this week.